met me because Michigan, when a young fella came who had been in the Bahama Islands, he met me there. And he talked a lot about being down there and how good it was for a couple of young fellas to work together, visit the islands in a boat and so forth. And I wasn't much interested, but he kept writing me after he left. So finally I said, all right, I'll come down for a couple of months this winter. And I left for Miami to the Bahamas. Some of you don't know much about the Bahamas, but some of them are fairly close to Florida. And the city of Nassau, the capital, is about 180 miles from Miami to Nassau. And I went with a boat at that time. There were no planes then, of course. And believe it or not, it's just 180 miles, but it took me part of 2 years to make that 180 miles. Because I left the last day of December and I got to the first day of January. So it took me from 1916 to 1917 to make 180 miles. And after we were there a while, we got a yacht built, a 51-foot yacht, an ocean-going yacht, four big sails, and we traveled all over those islands and visited a number of places in this yacht. We lived aboard the yacht because the accommodation ashore was offered us very poor, and we maybe stay in a place a couple of months, had children's meetings every afternoon, and preached the gospel at night. And we had some kind of cute experiences at times, I thought. For instance, something like this. When we first had the yacht, we knew nothing about seafaring and had never been on the ocean before in any small vessel. So when we came to this place, they wanted to go to another island, maybe 100 miles away. And by the way, you cross ocean passes between some of those islands, quite a stretch of ocean. And so we'd hired somebody to steer us because we didn't know much about seafaring at the time. Now, I remember about the second or third time we hired a man in a certain town called Savannah Sound. And we hired him for another island about 100 miles away. And we left at night because of the tide was high at night, and in the daytime it was too low to get out of the harbor, so we left at night. And he was steering this boat, and I was standing by the compass and looking at it, and I said to him, I said, I think you're steering the boat the wrong direction. Because I noticed when we came into this harbor, we came in the southeasterly direction, which means we have to go out the opposite, northwesterly direction. And you're steering northeast. I'm afraid you're going to run us up on something. Don't tell me, boss. He said, I've lived here all my life. I know every rock and shoal anywhere around here. He said, don't tell me. And in about 10 minutes, he ran the boat hard aground on a sunken rock. And when he did, he said, there's one of them now. He knew where they were. Another time, I remember I was staying with a brother who sold his produce in Nassau, and he was about 40 miles north of Nassau, in a little old town called The Current. And he'd been in Nassau in the market all week long. He was dead tired, and he had a colored man with him. And he said to this man, by sailing home, by the way, there were no motors in those early days, sailing home those 40 miles, it might take all night long, or longer even than that. And he was tired, so he said to this hired hand of his, now you steer this boat a while. He says, I'm so tired. He says, I'm going to take a sleep. He says, and then he said, you see that star up there? That's the North Star. You don't need the compass. Just keep your eye on the North Star, and you'll be going the right direction. So the boss went to sleep, and about 2 hours he woke up, and he could tell by the motion of the boat it wasn't going the right direction. The sea was hitting it sideways, and the sea should have been hitting it from the stern end of the boat. And so he knew something wrong, so he jumped up on deck, and as he did, the fella at the wheel woke up. He'd gone to sleep. And in the meantime, the boat had turned out and going back where they came from. And so when his man woke up, he looked all around, and then he saw this North Star behind him. You see, the boat was turned around, but he said to Mr. Elder, you better give me another one. I've steered past that star. That's amazing how he did it. He steered past the star. Another time, I was in an outlying little island, and a man was having a meeting, a college daughter was having a meeting in the old Chinese church, and the custom there is that the visiting preacher gets the collection. Well, not much in the way of collection, very poor people in some of those places. So he preached, and I said to the leader of the building, now listen, we were supposed to be there, we got there too late with our boat, and so he took the service. And when he got through preaching, he passed his salt pack around for a collection. And so it went around the oil, and he came back to him, and came back to him, he picked it up, and he looked in it, and he felt in it, and he turned around and shook it, and turned it over there, and pulled the thread band out, and felt all underneath the thread band, put the thread band in again, and turned it over there, and shook it once again, there wasn't a thing in it. And he went through all those motions very solemnly and quietly, and then he said, "Brethren and sisters, I'm so glad it got to happen." Could have been worse. Another old man I knew in the city of Nassau, he was a notorious petty thief. He sent his, he did something like this. He'd come to a house and carry a live chicken and say to the lady, "You want to buy a chicken?" He'd knock at the door. When he knocked, there was no answer. He realized there was nobody home, so he'd walk in and steal something. He had a chicken just as sort of a loose, you know, summoned to forget him to the door. And there was nobody asked at the door knocking, he didn't steal. Some of the people called. In fact, they told me that under 70 years, he spent up like 35 years in prison on very short sentences of 2 or 3 months each. And they treated him so. But he got so well acquainted in the prison, so they kind of nice to him. They put some curtains in his cell and put a radio, which was a rarity at that time, so he could listen to the radio. And he had lots of time. He read the Bible a great deal. He could talk to the Bible, talk to me about it, sometimes for an hour at a time. It could close it right away. But anyway, he had his cell, and when the sentence was over, he'd walk out and he'd say to the jailer, "Keep my room for me. I'll be back shortly." And in a couple of weeks, he'd be there again for another little test. Well, by and by, the prison warden died, and they sent another one from England. They were controlled by Britain, of course, the Bahamas. There's another prison keeper who did not know the old man, and he didn't treat him very kindly. He put him in the jail yard, breaking stone breaking, which they used for road paving and so. He had to work under the hot sun. He didn't like it one bit. And one day, one of our brethren there, who had a big grocery business and sold groceries to the prison, came to his prison yard and saw the old man there breaking stone. And he said to him, he said, "Styles, what are you doing here? I've never seen you work in the prison before. What are you doing here?" And the old man said, "Ah, Mr. Johnson," he says, "another pair of those with new not chosen." It's really amazing how they can say things in quite humorous oftentimes. One time we were in a place and the preacher was preaching. In fact, we had meetings in that church about 3 weeks or 4 weeks. All colored people, because we preach among white people, that's true, but among colored people, they give you an excellent hearing, I must say that. Well, he preached for about 3 weeks there, and then the last Sunday he said to me, he said, "Well, tonight I'm going to take this service, and I've listened to you preachers now for 3 weeks, and I'm going to preach once while you were here." Then he said, "You know, our sister Cecilia Feast, that he done died 2 months ago, and I clean forgot to preach a memorial service. So I'm going to give the sister Cecilia," her name was Cecilia, but for short we called her Sister Cecilia all the time. "I'm going to give the sister Cecilia's memorial service." And he took for his test, and he believed that Jesus died and rose again. So then the sleeping of Jesus will God bring with it. And he said, "Brethren and sisters, Sister Cecilia, she's done gone to heaven." He said, "You ask me why? How do I know?" He said, "Because he told me so." Yes, her sister Cecilia was a legal Christian. Then there'd be another thought, but she'd never done say much. She was a very quiet sister. And under a loud dress, I wish I had a few more than quiet sisters in this year, too. Very quiet, she'd never done say much. But she really went to heaven. She knew the Lord. You know, she trusted the Lord, just like I did. Just 50 years ago, I was walking up that big steep hill between the east side and the west side. And just when I got to the top of the hill, I was posting my load of sticks like Brother Bunyan in the Bible. He had Bunyan in the Bible. Brother Bunyan in the Bible. All of a sudden, my load of sticks fell off kabunk and they rolled down the hill. I never seen them since. He said, I got saved just as silly as this. How? By our text says he believed that Jesus died and rose again. That's what I did. I must have achieved it. And then, my friends, you know what our text says? That the Lord, if he believes that he had died and rose again, the Lord is going to come back again. And he's going to come back for Cecilia and for me and for you if you're the Christian. He's coming back. And he says, the Bible says when he comes back, he comes with 10,000 claps of thunder. And his black eyes roll. Did you ever see 100 claps of thunder? What do you think was the Lord said? 10,000 claps of thunder. So after the meeting, I said to him, I said, how do you arrive at those 10,000 claps of thunder? I never read about them in the Bible. And he looked at me and said, you all don't know about that thunder? I said, no, I don't ever remember reading about it. He said, listen, he said, brother, he said, I thought you knew something about the Bible. I heard you preach for 3 years. And you don't know about that thunder? I said, no. Well, he said, don't the Bible say when the Lord comes, the lightning shines from one end of heaven to the other? That takes 30 thunder, brother. And let me pray on the thunder. Well, to the other story, I want to tell you in closing something that isn't humorous, it has been a tremendous blessing in my life and mine. I've been in the Bahamas about almost 10 years when we had, and that's particularly, we had 3 very heavy hurricanes. And this particular one was in October in 1926. We had 4 children at the time. The one that you had preached a few minutes ago was 5 years old at the time. My oldest son and my daughter was 7 years old. And we had another girl younger and finally a baby about 5 or 6 months old. And it was a lovely evening. The moon was shining bright. There was a report of a hurricane coming, but it didn't look like it. And we had a couple of young ladies visiting with us, and we said to them, well, it doesn't look like any hurricane tonight, as far as we can tell. You know that we had no radio or anything like that. It only came by report somehow, people hearing of it and passing it on. We went to bed, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, this hurricane was upon us, and it threw ashes and blew at a rate of 200 miles an hour. Well, it blew all night long, carrying heavy rains that just smashed through the roof somehow. The whole house was soaked inside. I spent part of my time wiping up the weather. I might have forgotten about it, because about 7:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, there was a glass calm. I'm blowing about 200 miles an hour. It's just like you cut the wind off of the knife. It was instantly calm, like in this room here. And I said to my wife's father, who lived next door to us, says, where does this peculiar calm come from? He said, well, don't you know? He said, you're in the exact eye of the hurricane now. You know, a hurricane blows like this, and in the exact center, of course, when anything is spinning, the center is standing still. And if you're in the very center of the storm, that's why there's no wind. He said, but the storm will keep on passing by you, and by the wind will come from the opposite direction. Well, I said, suppose it does, I said, from the opposite, that will be from the ocean. Our house was right close to the water, not the ocean itself, but deep water, right close to it. Father, but from here to the other wall here, wall there. And I said, what about when the wind comes here, it will come from the sea side, won't it bring the water with it? He said, oh, no, he said, we've seen storms here before, we've never seen any water. Well, about 7:30 in the morning, all of a sudden, from a perfect calm, the wind came again and blew again at a terrific speed, about 200 miles an hour. And in about 5 minutes, it brought along a sea of water about 6 foot high, a solid wall of water. It smashed against my house and broke half of it off that I had built down for an extra dining room and kitchen and so forth. We had just gotten up from breakfast, and I'd be jumped to the other part. And then in the meantime, it smashed the front window in and the doors and so forth, and the water was about 2 or 3 feet high downstairs in the house. And with these small children, we couldn't stay there, so we stood on the upstairs stairway, about 10 feet above the floor level. Down below, I could see my organ. organ floating around in the water. And we stood there about 10 minutes on this tail, and the real tidal wave came. The proof is a proof atlas. It rose a solid 20 foot high, a solid wall of water, 20 foot high. And when we saw and heard it coming, my wife and I kissed each other, and I said, God, goodbye, we'll meet again in heaven. It seemed to have been impossible for us to escape. Well, the next thing we knew, that tidal wave smashed. Not only our house, but dozens of houses were smashed to bits and washed away. And our house completely smashed to bits. I went through, I was standing on the other side of a glass window, and I went through the wind and almost got my left leg cut off. And I grabbed the baby, or one of those good ladies staying with us, and I grabbed him and I told them, you better jump in, or if you stay in this house, you're going to get killed. And so they swam with the river, a pretty good swimmer, and somehow they reached 3 further back and held on to the machete. But my wife and the 4 children went, and I ran through that window. And the first thing I knew, I came to my senses. I was not unconscious. I came to my senses. I was lying on a piece of a wreckage of somebody's house, and the baby I'd lost, of course. I was not unconscious, and I was bleeding terribly. And my wife was about 50 or 100 yards inland, in the water, deep water, water about 15, 20 foot deep, with 3 small children. She couldn't swim with them, of course. She held on to a wreckage of trees and boats and houses all floating around. And she clung to them, and the children clung to her, and somehow she kept them together. And when I saw her, I dropped off the wreckage I was on and swam towards her. And finally, we got together, and we kept those 3 children between us, somehow or other, by and by the roof of somebody's house watched over us. And I had a cross raft that was visible, and I hoisted the 3 children and laid them on the cross raft so the feet would keep out of the way of wreckage and so forth. And my wife and I clung to it, and by and by she kept carrying that roof inward, further in, and by it settled up on the higher left, something at this angle. This is the lower end of here, and it settled down so hard that we couldn't get out from under it. We sat at this lower end, and the water kept rising and kept rising and rising, till finally we crawled way up to the upper end of the roof. And then finally I had to take the 3 children and I lift up and hold their heads out of the water to keep them from drowning. It looked like they were to drown under this roof. And right at the extreme moment, there was a terrific crash, and my wife's parents' home smashed on the top of this roof that we were under, on this end. If the water hadn't made us move, we would have been crushed to bits down here. It smashed the whole thing to flat. And that's where we had been sitting just 5 minutes before. And so, when it crashed, but it broke the roof open, and the danger of our drowning was gone, and eventually they were found, and I had to be operated on my leg to save it, and so forth, and we were spared. And the amazing thing was that God saved us from death twice that day. First of all, from not drowning, and second, from being crushed a bit under the sea. He saved our lives twice in one morning. And so I thank God, and she and I thank God. And it's been a lesson to me and a blessing to me all my life long. My wife and I both said, you know, here we lost everything we had on earth in 15 seconds. I spent 10 years building the home myself, enlarging it, improving it, and it all went in 15 seconds. And I said to my wife, it doesn't pay to set your hope on things on earth that you can lose them that easy. Now, your house is not taken from you, but if you die, you're going to be taken from your house. You're not going to have your house here. We are not going to have ours again either. It's wet. But it made me realize that it pays to live for the world to come and not for this world. To have something there that cannot be driven or lost in tidal waves and so forth. And so we prove God's mercy in this, and it proves a real blessing to us the rest of our lives. And we rejoice in the fact that while we lost that day, it's in glory to Christ, and we shall see it again someday. Well, that story is in this book of my life I've written, and if you're interested in it, there'll be more details in it. You might like to purchase it. It's going to be issued by Christian Mission Press. Again, I say it's not issued for the sake of making money. I don't make any money on books. If there's any profit, it's given away. But I think you might enjoy leaving if you hear of us having come out into prayer. Well, I guess that's about all.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Mr. O'Brien,
some disease came in my eyes, and both of them are affected in the light. I never knew to. It's practically blind and has been since I was 3 years old. I only have one eye. The other one came back somewhat, never perfect, really, but it came back somewhat, and I managed to get along with it. Only I several times had other troubles with it. I once had 3 months in a hospital in Holland, and it attended to. Now, when I was about 24 years old in Annapolis, Michigan, the doctor there told me that in his estimation I would lose my sight within a year. Since your eye is distinctly deteriorating, and I think you'll lose your eye in about a year. So I just started preaching by the bit, and so I said, well, if I'm going to lose my eyesight, I'm going to memorize the Word of God so that I could still preach and I don't have any eyes. So I started memorizing the New Testament. And some of you have heard before, I memorized the whole New Testament and quite a few portions of the Old. It took me 11 years to memorize the New Testament. And I didn't only memorize it just once, you know, but if you also retain it, you have to rehearse it and rehearse it and rehearse it. I think I rehearsed it at least 200 times altogether in order to maintain it. And not only that, but I made it my business to rehearse so I knew where the verses were located. I was first married. My wife helped me in that one. This is Pete Paul's 100 verses, like God so loved us, and I shall know where it was located. 1 Timothy 1:15 says, this is a faithful thing, and I would tell you where the verse was found. And then the other way around, she just quotes the text, and I quote the verse. And we did that until I became rather perfect. I knew every verse in the New Testament. Because there you get as old as I am, it doesn't work quite that sharp anymore. But I learned the whole New Testament by heart and found it a wonderful blessing and a help to me in my own study and in meditation of God's Word and so on. Well, the peculiar thing is, I did this memory when I got through, my eyes were much stronger than they were before. And I just think God gave me that scale in order to get me to the memory. That's how I feel. Because my eyes have been better since. They've never been strong, and yet all those years, and that's now 50 years ago, since they said I've lost my sight, all those years, my eyes have been opposite. And some of you may know you can take something what's called eye exercise. It's been real help to me. There are several books out on it. Exercise, like you stretch them way over and so forth, up and down and around. It tones up the eye, and it has been a tremendous help to me in maintaining my eyesight. If you ever really come with your eyes, and your sight becomes weaker, let me tell you how to do it. The first principle I've used, you just push your head and turn your eyes way to the left, as far as you can go, and then back to center again. Do it 15 times. Do it to the right 15 times. Hold your head still and turn your eyes way to the right, and up 15 times, and down. And the same thing in the moving motion, like this. And the same the other way around, about 15 times. And then close it tight and wink about a dozen times and open it and close your eyes again with tight and wink. And you do those exercises, you'll be amazed how it tones up your sight. It was a tremendous help to me. Well, anyway, God places it and uses eyes that were poor to begin with. And yet, I've been doing a tremendous deal of reading and writing and studying with this one. And I thank God for it.
Thank you, Mr. Winryan. Wonderful how God...